Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Distinguished Humans Indie Game Dev Club. I am your host, Brad, and unfortunately, I will not be much of a part of the show today. A bit of a scheduling conflict, which we actually have to figure out. For those of you who don't know, I've been cast in my first theater production in 4 years, which is super exciting. I'm really looking forward to that. Anyone in the Northeast Ohio area in February, you can come see me live on stage. If you want some more information on that, just hit me up in the Discord. But unfortunately, we rehearse a lot of the times on Sunday nights, which is when we generally record this show. So Zach and I'll have to figure something out. But I didn't want you to wait any longer for this wonderful show we have coming up. I know Zach has a lot of great stuff to talk about. And we have a very special Chris's Corner today where he talks about his development of his game that is releasing very soon. So very exciting. Very proud of Chris for getting that out there. So hopefully you guys show some love to him. But I will let those two take it away. You guys enjoy the show and have a wonderful, wonderful day.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. It's Zach coming in hot today. I'm coming in solo. I don't even have a script. I don't even have an outline. There's only one thing on my list that I need to get to. And it's something I've been waiting to do now for a couple weeks. I asked Chris, the guy who does Chris's Corner segments on our show. He just released his new game, Sut, S-U-T. You can find it on Steam. It's less than a dollar, folks. Totally worth. Go get it. And, I'm sorry. There's actually two things on my list that we're going to do on this episode. But they're both related to Chris's game, Sut. The first one, which was the one I planned before I just realized I had a second one, was I had Chris do a recording. And instead of a Chris's Corner being just a 5-minute clip today, it's going to be about a 22-ish minute segment of Chris just telling us about his game. I had a few questions for him, and I gave him creative freedom to answer it however he wanted. Think of it as a prompted but not prompted interview where he has pure freedom to kind of talk about whatever he wanted to about the process of making Sut. I did give him a few things I wanted to hear, such as how it came about, how the concept built itself over time, all that stuff. So I'm pretty excited to see it. I have not listened to it. I have been very tempted to listen to it because I had this idea that, you know what, I'll listen to it and then I'll sprinkle it across and I'll like talk about each little segment. Screw that. I want to listen to the whole thing with you guys, and what I'm going to do from there is I'm going to comment on it afterwards. But before we get to that, and the second thing I'm going to leave is a little surprise, and it's a surprise for Chris. It's not a huge deal, but it is a surprise. Before we do that, I want to kind of just talk about some things I've been doing in the game sphere. I guess I'll start there since that's what our entire podcast is built on. I've been kind of getting that itch, right? I'm approaching the end of the semester. I graduate in 4 weeks. Yeah, oh my goodness. In 4 weeks, I will be done with school. Oh, this is amazing. But yeah, in about 4 weeks, today is the 12th that I'm recording this, November 12th. And I'm pretty pumped. I cannot express it. But I have set myself up now, and I've started to kind of dabble into some game design again. I am continuing the project that I began at the beginning of this year that I had to put on hold because school got crazy busy, and then I got busy with work, and I'm also doing school full-time and work full-time while also managing two children, now three dogs, one of which is a puppy and a cat. I have a zoo going on and marriage. So, yeah, I am a man who likes to keep himself busy. That is for sure. But a lot of stuff is going to open up once school finishes, so I started to kind of prime myself for it. All I've done is go relook at a lot of my documentation I had on my game, and to keep in mind, I started this game in Unity. I started prototyping in Unity. I have since scrapped the prototype, and I'm thankful that I did because I saw some flaws in the fun factor, Was it a cool concept? Yes, but it was a fun factor flaw. And so I had to scrap the original idea a bit and reworked it into a true, proper turn-based system. And I also noticed my design was lacking some stuff related to this system. So I'm just re-looking through a lot of that and criticizing myself, basically, my own work. You know, looking at what did I do well? What did I write down and document that sounds like great stuff? What did I document that's just too much junk? What do I need to, you know, fix in my own design here? What, you know, as a player myself, who's going to be a player of my own game, what here doesn't sound fun? And that was effectively what it came down to. And that's some game stuff I've been into. Brad's not here today, but that's okay. I was gonna talk to him about his mobile app. He's building the drinking game app. I've been pretty excited to hear about that. I have not talked to him about it. I try not to talk to him about game stuff too much outside of our podcast, because I want you guys to also be a part of that conversation as it freshly happens. So Brad, looking forward to hearing more on that, because I know he'll listen in on this stuff too. Let's see, what else have I been up to? Well, just busy with school. I did pick up 2 books actually to help me with some professional stuff as well, with my actual job. So at my work, I work predominantly in C# and ASP.NET. I know a lot of you are probably hearing that and going, that means nothing to me, and that's okay. But I do. I code a lot in C# at my job. C#, JavaScript, SQL, HTML, CSS, all that kind of stuff. I it's a web application. So I bought 2 books for myself to help me kind of be a better programmer in C# and ASP.NET. I got C# In Depth by John Skeet. If you don't know who John Skeet is, he's a very popular dude in the C# community. He is basically one of the top Stack Overflow answer people. I don't know what they're called, but he's like the top dude on Stack Overflow. He's one of the highest rated people, and he is an expert in C#. Again, very well known. This book came highly recommended through Reddit threads, as well as a few other places I just kind of Googled around looking for some options. The other one I got, which kind of stood out to me, and this stood out to me because it goes with what this whole podcast is all about. It is called The C# Player's Guide, 5th Edition by R.B. Whitaker. This spoke to me on a level that I honestly, I don't know how else to explain it, but it is a book that teaches you how to code in C#. Now, it starts, and I mean it, it starts at the basics, okay? For those of you who don't know what that means, it gives a quick little knowledge check on it, you know, very early on. I haven't even looked at it, but I'm just looking at, like, the table of contents, which is also laid out with, like, a checklist, and each thing that you finish is worth a certain amount of experience. You level up, like, you gain levels as you progress and get better at this. It is wild to me. It's a really cool approach. It basically gamifies learning of programming in C#. Now, would this book be useful to someone who maybe has never programmed before? I don't know. Like I said, I haven't even read like some of the intro stuff to see what this means, but it has boss battles and stuff like that. Like it really gamifies the whole thing. So like it builds you up and teaches you things, and as you gain experience, you go, and your boss battle will maybe be something related to it. It's really cool. Just to give you some ideas of how basic it gets, the very first few tasks, like I said, is just a knowledge check on C#. The next task is to install Visual Studio. Both of those, the knowledge check is 25 experience. The installation of Visual Studio is 75 experience. Then your very first task, which every programmer pretty much knows, is Hello World, making your very first program. That's worth 50 XP. So within the first few tasks, you get 150 experience points. That's solid. And it looks like just to get to level 2, you need 200 experience points. So that's awesome. Like I said, there's a full roadmap. Even has like a world map that is the roadmap. It's really cool. I really love this. So I got this book. I will share pictures of this in the show notes and just kind of give you guys a little teaser of what it's all about. It's got side quests, like all kinds of really cool stuff. And, you know, this probably would be a good book for those of you who are just looking to learn programming in general. But again, this I'm not sure. I'll let you know as I dive deeper. I literally just got these books, and I'm starting with C Sharp in depth because that's the one I think that'll be most effective at my work. But I did get this Player's Guide one because it's just a fun way to like go back and relearn some of the basics, maybe test my foundational skills, as well as maybe learn something new that I can do in a practical way. Every single one of these is done through like a little miniature project, and like the end game, which there is an actual end game, so it's almost like an MMO in a sense. The end game is all kinds of really cool stuff. I'm really excited. Yeah. So those are some cool books. Highly recommend. Again, that's C Sharp In Depth 4th Edition by John Skeet, and the C Sharp Player's Guide 5th Edition by R.B. Whitaker. And I have a feeling these books will be something that I will wear down quite a bit. They're physical copies. I have them in my hand right now. Ooh, I just smacked my headphones with that. I'm sorry if that went over that audio. But anyway, also, real quick, on the C-Sharp In-Depth, for those of you who might be interested in it, if you buy it, these books, by the way, were both under $40. C-Sharp In-Depth was like $39 and some change, so I guess over $40 after taxes and everything. And then the C-Sharp Player's Guide, if I remember, was only like $25-$30. So they're not overly expensive books for what you get out of them. You know, it's not like a textbook you get when you're in college. Ugh, gross. Anyway, yeah, so I spent less than $80 to get both of these books. But the C-Sharp In-Depth, what I was getting at is you actually can get all of the digital versions of it if you buy the physical version. You get all of the digital parts along with it. So if you have a Kindle and you prefer to read it that way, but maybe you're like me and you like physical books, or you don't really care, you can interchange between the two. That's how I am. I prefer a physical book, but I can interchange into some Kindle if I need to. This allows you to do that, which is really nice. That was very kind of them to do. And I have a couple friends who are currently broke as a joke college students, you know, and I shared the PDF with them, and I'm sure that may not be something I'd want to share publicly, but I did. Anyway, so let's move on to Chris's stuff. I'll talk about all the fun stuff I've been doing. After that, I'd like to get the business out of the way. And I'm also just really excited to hear Chris. So without further ado, let's get into Chris's Corner on SUT development.
Hello, distinguished humans, and welcome back to Chris's Corner. Today we're not doing a creative exercise, as much as I love doing those. Blink requested that I cover the kind of Steam release process for my game, and then Zach expanded on that and was like, I'd love to hear about the whole deal, right? Give us some details, talk about some pitfalls and like some struggles and the whole process in general, right? Like, give us a bigger breakdown. You don't have to stick to your usual 5 minutes. Okay, great. Sounds good to me. I was like, I'll try to keep it like 10, 15. Does that sound good? He's like, take as long as you want. I'm like, that's a real risk you're taking there. I'm going to try to keep it under 15 because I can talk. I can talk for a while. And I'm like, with this kind of thing, I might go teacher mode, and that's no good. That can be a little boring. I don't know if I've referenced this before, but I have a background in teaching. So I am going to use that a little bit when talking about a couple things, because I think there's interesting lessons to be drawn from my own development thing. Like, the stuff I've learned from development is really interesting to me in really weird ways. I wrote out this whole list. I wrote out this whole timeline, and I was recording this, and I was talking through the timeline, and I was like, you know what? This is boring. And it's not actually that interesting. Like, it's not like exciting, useful information. It's just like weird, detailed, nitty-gritty stuff. So I'm kind of going to jump around a lot. I'm going to jump from interesting thing to interesting thing, because I think that's kind of how I provide value. Like, I apologize, but I just can't give you a straight timeline. I'm going to jump around a lot, and it's going to be a little unstructured, and that's also kind of how I develop. So I don't know. It's relevant, right? We are going to start at the beginning, though, because I think it's really worth looking at for a very specific reason. And this, you know, this is like after the game analysis stuff. I could be completely wrong. Maybe this isn't how it worked, whatever. But I think that this is important. The idea behind the game started because I saw a picture of the Soot Sprites from Spirited Away, the Ghibli movie. And I thought, wait, I might be able to animate that. I might be able to make a little soot sprite and I might be able to animate it. I'm going to try that. So I went and I tried it. And the reason that this was like a big thing for me is because the art stuff gets in my way. The animation, I was like, how am I going to animate something? How is that going to work? What's going on with this? Like, I was trying to figure it out, but I was at this point where I was getting excited about it and I wanted to figure it out. And I'm taking a course and all this stuff. And I go, okay, maybe I could animate it. And I do. And I put it into an engine at some point. You know, we're skipping around a little bit here. It was not immediate. But I get it animated. And I go, oh, that looks good. And then eventually I get it into an engine. I'm like, oh, cool. I can make it move in an engine. And the whole thing starts taking off. And the reason that this is interesting to me, the reason I point to this is I think whenever we start trying to make a game, we look for a good idea. We look, and what is a good idea? We're like, oh, an interesting one, an idea that grabs me, an idea that I'm like, oh, what a cool idea. But the idea that I ended up actually making a game about wasn't one of these cool ideas that I come up with. It was just like, oh, here's the thing I can animate. I'm just going to work off of that. And I got so excited about it because I could do it. I was like, this is my big barrier and I can get through it. And like, you might look at it and go like, yeah, well, of course you can get through. It's a black and white little ball. Like, yeah, easy. That's the point. It gets it out of the way. And then I can like work on making a game. And I don't have to like get so focused on this one thing. And it's like, yeah, it's good enough. Fine. Let's go. So I think the takeaway there is like the real power in that initial idea was the freedom it gave me to kind of like go, yeah, good enough to the art so that it wasn't this huge intimidating thing. And it kind of knocked out a whole category of intimidation for me. It was like, yeah, well, we don't even have to worry about that. So whatever, who cares? Let's go. And then I ended up making art that I was like pretty content with. I want to keep learning some art stuff now. I want to work pretty hard on that now. That's a big focus of mine, probably for my next project. Because I seem to come up with themes that are very art heavy. So here we go, right? Like, I guess we're going that way and games are very visual. The next big takeaway is once I started getting really overwhelmed with ideas for this game, and this happened pretty quickly, I got really overwhelmed once I realized I was actually making a game. I just reached a point where, I say pretty quickly, it was probably months. I reached a point where I was constantly thinking about all this scope stuff. I was just like, it was just running through my mind. I don't know how long this lasted. It was probably like not even a week, but it felt like forever. Of just so much stuff. Just this endless chain of like, well, do I need this? Do I need this? Do I need this? Do I need this? I was just like, what do I need? What do I need? What do I need? What do I need? Relentlessly, like, how many art assets am I going to have to make? How much sound do I need? How much this do I need? Do I need this for this? What about this for that? And I just wrote it down and then I was fine. Like, I just externalized it and it was fine. And I think the takeaway on that one for me was, okay, I need to externalize my memory. Otherwise, I'm going to be constantly overwhelmed and I won't be able to focus on making anything or being creative or assessing my own creative work. If I'm able to externalize my memory, write it down somewhere, put it somewhere, it's going to help a lot. It's going to let me go back to it. Like, I it was taking up so much of my RAM. I wasn't able to focus because I was jumping around from idea to idea to idea in this really chaotic way. And like, all of them were important. And I was just trying to remember all of them at all times. And it's like, yeah, write it down, man. Write it down. Big paper. Stick it to your wall. So it's always there in the same way we want it. Like, I want it always there. I want it kind of on my mind all the time, but I don't want to be remembering it all the time. I just want it available at all times. So I just made it very visible. If I need it, I look at it. Boom, done. But I'm not constantly trying to remember it. What are other really notable things? Spaghetti code is the best kind of code, and I love it. I really am completely fine with my code looking like a disaster, as long as it's not affecting other people, obviously. But for this project, it was like, done is the best thing. Done, that was the whole thing. It's got to get done. And so my code got really messy. At one point, it got messy enough that I needed to read a book on debugging to start fixing the bad stuff. And I fixed the bad stuff, and then it was good. And my code is like not that spaghetti, but, you know, like you can see me learning how to code as I make the game, which is great. It's a little wild. At least I assume you can. Honestly, I haven't looked at it in a while because I was so locked in on level design. Oh, God. The mechanics for this game evolved alongside the level design, which is cool, I guess. But it also means I had to throw out a lot of levels. And I spent a lot of time just like throwing together levels, throwing them away, throwing them together, throwing them away. And then when I finally did, I had all the mechanics locked in. And I was like, okay, that's it. No more adding mechanics. We're good. We have enough mechanics to get 50 levels. Because before that, genuinely, I just did not have enough mechanics to get 50 levels that were actually good. So I got to that point, wasted a lot of time on levels that I didn't need to make, but it, maybe not wasted, because I was trying to figure out how versatile my mechanics were, right? I finally get to this point, and then I go, okay, lock it in. And then, at this point, I'm thinking, in my brain, I'm like, this will be easy. I just got to make 50 levels, no problem. Problem. No, it was rough. Level design was the most draining part of the entire process. Like, oh no, I have to track down this impossible bug in my, okay, whatever. Like, not really. I mean, like, that's draining in its own way. Level design is draining in a really weird way. I was like trying to read the minds of people that don't exist. I feel like, you know, when you get a workout that hits a muscle that you didn't even know you had, that's how my brain felt after I did level design for like a week. I was like, what is happening in there? What muscle am I working right now? Like, what is going on? Why am I so fatigued? I took so many naps during that. I was like, I can't. Why is this so difficult? It annihilated me, and it was so satisfying. Everything in this whole process was, this is horrifically difficult. It is destroying me. It's so complicated and confusing and foreign. It's all stuff that I've just never dealt with before. And what am I doing? What am I doing? That's like the core experience. And every time I figured it out and I went, oh, that's great. That's so satisfying that I figured it out. Just one thing after another, all the way to the very end, was just like, oh, this is unfamiliar to me. Oh, figured it out. Nice. Right? And I just, that's why keeping the first project small is huge. I can't admit, oh my God, making an MMO for your first project, stop. Don't. It's hard enough making a platformer. Just make a platformer. Oh no. Yeah, I can't imagine doing something like that. But maybe those people already have that thing in them that's like, I can handle anything you throw at me, whatever. Just throw it at me. I'll figure it out, right? Because I feel like I had to train that. And I feel like this game trained me on whatever, I'll figure it out. Like, throw the thing at me, I will figure it out because I want to do this and I'm going to do this. And it's happening, so we're going to do it, right? Okay, pitfalls. Let's just... hold on. UI stuff is going to take longer than you think it is. And save data stuff is a pain. That's all I have to say on those. I'm really proud of them. I like my user interface a lot. It took a long time. And it's really important. And I've seen so much bad UI stuff. And fine. And then the save data stuff was also, it's probably completely fine if you understand it, but God, it was what a pain to figure out. Bugs, everybody has bugs, tons of bugs. I don't like animation bugs, and I was using the animation system kind of sloppily, and yeah, I was being a little inconsistent with it at first, and then I got more consistent, but occasionally the inconsistencies from the beginning came back around and bit me really hard. I fixed an animation bug, like, I think, like, the week before release. That was, like, a significant little bug. And I was like, oh, there we go. Finally fixed it. All right, great. I couldn't find it for forever. And then it turned out it was just another animation bug. Meaning a bug caused by the animator. Like, it was like the animator was getting stuck in one animation, and then it was preventing the player from, like, reacting appropriately to something because it wasn't allowed to do it while it was in that animation state. There was stuff like that. So that was a huge pitfall. I really should have figured out what I was doing with the animator. And like forced consistency on myself as soon as I figured it out. I say that, but I learned how to use it, and that you learn by making mistakes. So fair enough. Other pitfalls. Here's a weird one. This is, I think, a really good one. Putting off unfamiliar tasks for too long and being angsty about it, and then you do them and you go, oh, wait, that was actually easy. Sometimes they're not easy, but sometimes they're really easy. I said 15 minutes. It looks like it's going to be 20. I think we're going 20. I'm sorry, because there's still interesting stuff in here. Efficient workflow for art was a problem. I kept doing art too early and having to redo it, especially animation again. Animation stuff, man, I just kept running into it. Let's talk about the category that I love now. This is the really interesting stuff for me, because I think there's a lot of value to be found in figuring out how you work on projects. And I learned a lot about how I work on projects. The first one, and this is probably my favorite, is napping counts as working for me. If I have set myself a certain number of hours that I'm going to work on game dev, and I'm exhausted, and I start working, and I find myself going, uh-oh, I'm being really, really inefficient and miserable, and this is terrible. Well, my goal is long-term sustainability of a game dev career. So I'm going to take a nap. Additionally, if I keep working without taking that nap, I'm going to dig myself my own grave. I'm going to add bugs. I'm going to screw things up. It's going to be horrific. I'm going to have to undo all of it. Just take the nap. And then I count it as work, because if I don't count it as work, then I'm going to try to push through it and I'm not going to take the nap. So I have to count it as work. At least that's what I had to do. And it worked perfectly. It was great. I loved it. For me, exercise is mandatory. If I don't exercise, I don't have energy. And this is one that I think that is going to be relatable for other people. Everybody talks about time management. It was not about time management for me. Time management was big. Yeah, sure. Fine. Huge. Energy management was so much more important to me. I spent a lot of time in the gym because it gives me energy. And if I didn't spend that time in the gym, it's not like I was going to spend it on game dev. In fact, I was going to spend less time on game dev if I spent less time in the gym. I know that seems weird, but like if I didn't go to the gym, I would turn into a lump and I would never work on my game dev stuff, I think. I suspect. So energy versus time management. I will spend time to get more energy, because energy is the one I run out of first, for sure. Well, I say that. They're both kind of rough, honestly. But energy is the one I run out of first, yeah. What else? I used, when we were talking about keeping things written down, kind of externalizing your memory, I used a program called MilaNote for that, that I saw other game developers recommend on like YouTube, devlogs and stuff. It was really handy for more specific tasks and like bug tracking and whatever. I set a hard deadline, and I set what's called quit conditions, which were like, if your game how do I put this? If this project is not moving along at a rate that is like acceptable enough that it makes it look like it's actually going to get released, this is the point at which you quit working on this project. I set conditions to say, if this happens, you're done. Project's dead. You either release it now or it's done. And they were intentionally very relaxed conditions because it was like, okay, if you can't get to this point, something is wrong and you need to be spending your energy somewhere else, right? So I set some of those. I focused on learning over any kind of results. And here's a really big one. Sorry. I got sidetracked for a second there. It's a little late for me right now. I focused on learning and I did not fantasize about the end of the whole process. That was important. I did not fantasize about success. I did not imagine the release. I did not imagine the glory, not intentionally at least. I wasn't like, oh, and then I'm going to finish and then this is going to... Anytime I do that, it destroys me. My motivation is gone. I can't do that. It does not work for me. It ruins me. It keeps me from doing anything. It's bad. If I catch myself doing it, then I'm like, oh, I was doing that thing. And then I start like, I don't know, I do something else. It's not something I intentionally do. I will not lean into it. It's not like a, you know, it's not a horrible thing if it happens, but I will not lean into it. I don't stare at the end of the project, right? That was, I had to learn that if I stare at the end of the project, it's a problem. It gets me stuck. It gets me overwhelmed. Staring at the end overwhelms the crap out of me. It's really rough. Last couple notes before we end here. I can't believe I ended up going for 20 minutes on this. Emotion stuff. I have so much to say about this. I talked about this in my own podcast for like 30 minutes. I just went in on this side of things. All right. So if you want to hear that, you're going to have to go over there because I've already taken up enough of the time on this podcast. That podcast is Game Develop Repeat, shameless plug. It's episode 45. It's the most recent one. Well, it might not be the most recent one anymore, but it's episode 45. Releasing the game. Everybody's like, this is so great. You're releasing a game. Amazing, fantastic, wonderful, woo. Finishing the game felt great. All right, finishing it felt really good. Releasing it felt bad. I did not feel good when I released the game. It ruined my day. The rest of my week was bad. I felt bad. It didn't feel good. It felt bad. People kept congratulating me, and I was like, thanks. Don't congratulate me. Like, in person. I say that. Everybody on the Discord, like, it's been amazing. This community has been wildly supportive, and it's been absolutely fantastic. There was, like, a week where people in my life were congratulating me, and I was like, no, my game is dead. It's dead. I can't work on it anymore. It's finished, and I hate it.
I hate that it's over.
It feels terrible. But finishing it felt really good. Something about releasing it made it feel terrible. So I don't know. I got to dig deeper into that. I go into a whole thing. I've been tracking like my feelings about all this stuff just like in my idea notepad because I feel like it's really important to like pay attention to how you're responding to your own game development process. So I'm doing that too. That helps me a lot. I even end up going over 20 minutes. Thank you for listening. That's everything I have to say about that for now. I mean, honestly, I could talk about it for years, but there you go. Yeah, thank you guys so much. The amount of support you've given me is absurd. Like the kindness and just the Discord has been so supportive and, God, it's amazing. Thank you. It's so cool. And thanks for having me go on this long friggin' rant about this whole process. And I hope it was useful for you. I'm way over. And I will talk to you all in the next one. I'm sending it back to the show. See ya.
All right, Chris. No worries there, friend. Like I said, no time limit at all. You did great. I'm going to try my best to go through my notes. I was actually taking notes as I listened to you, and I was also gathering some links together to hopefully be able to share everything in the show notes. While your intro music was playing, I was trying to remember everything I said myself. So I don't know. Maybe I remembered it. Maybe I didn't. But as far as your stuff goes, I got a lot of links there that you mentioned in your conversation. So anyway, without further ado, let's get into my notes. You talked a lot about art and how it was like very intimidating for you, and it is also the same for me. Sprites, art, anything, it all scares the crap out of me. But I also keep doing something to myself, and you really touched on this a lot towards the latter half of this of your recording. Is I follow a very simple rule, KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. Like, anytime I start to feel overwhelmed or if I start to over-engineer a problem, that's usually the first thing I'll tell myself. I will literally say it out loud to myself, and then I start to think differently about the problem that I'm having. Even if I have to say it multiple times, almost like a mantra, like I'm just singing to myself or something, you know, a terrible song. But yeah, I agree. You know, art's scary to me. But it looks like you found your little way to do it. I have a bunch of people who've offered to do all kinds of assets for me, for free in my personal life. And, you know, I would feel horrible doing that to someone, especially if I'm going to release something for money. But at the same time, as someone who's releasing their first game, you know, I know my first game's not going to be, it's not going to be a profit. Let's just be real. But it's more of a learning experience for me. And, you know, so I am willing to delve into this art area a little bit. But again, it's one of those things where it's a trade-off of what am I willing to do myself versus what am I willing to use free assets for. Something you talked about a lot is when you started to get really overwhelmed by constantly thinking about the game and not writing things down. And then you did a technique that I think Brad and I may have talked about this before on the show. Maybe we haven't. If this is the first time we've talked about it, I'd be really surprised. There's a technique in programming called rubber ducking. And all it is imagine there's a rubber duck on your desk. You have just a little rubber ducky sitting there. And you're stuck on a problem. And you need to figure it out. You're stuck, though. You're hard stuck. So what you do is you look at your rubber duck and you start to tell your rubber duck the problem as if they were either another programmer or even in some cases, if they were someone who knew nothing of programming. And you start to break the problem down in detail to the duck. And what it is you're verbalizing, or as you put it, you're externalizing your thoughts. And all of a sudden, you'll come to a conclusion. And you can do this with another person as well. We do it all the time at work. We'll look at each other and I'll look at my partner at work and I'll be like, hey, Sean, Can I rubber duck off you? You know, and like, we'll do stuff like that all the time. And all we do is we just verbalize the problem. So you found value in that. That's really awesome. And Chris, if you haven't done it yet, I know it sounds insane, but get a rubber duck or the equivalent of a rubber duck. It could be your favorite cartoon character or whatever. Get something on your desk or wherever it is you work. It doesn't even have to be a desk. Just when you're working, have that little thing nearby that you can talk to. If you have a pet, talk to your pet. Tell your pet all about the problem out loud. And it's amazing. It really is. There's so many times when you'll rubber duck to a real person and that person will not say a word and you will come to the conclusion all by yourself. It is something that I really underestimated the value of before I started working as a professional software developer. So when I was a student, I think I truly underestimated the value of it. But now that I've been working for just 6 months, which is still very new, there is tremendous value in rubber ducking. Value in documentation. You've figured out the golden key. Your documentation doesn't have to look clean, by the way. When I was in game design school, I learned I was privy to have access to like talks and stuff from professionals in industry. And when these people shared their internal documentation, whew, it could get ugly. So then it made me feel better about having ugly documentation. So don't hesitate on that. And Chris, I'm not sure how much you documented versus how much you didn't, but it sounds like you did quite a bit. And that's great. Huge part, though, this one. I have a lot of notes on this part. When you started talking about your spaghetti code, I was laughing. I was laughing out loud. You know, but you did say something that I agree with. You had to get it done, right? And my note here, I'm going to read it word for word. No amount of pristine code that ever sees production will matter, or that never sees production will matter. I personally would rather see you finish a project with some mediocre code than never finish it because you want it to be, quote, perfect, end quote. The code I made when I started my job versus today is vastly different, and that's just 6 months of time. So yeah, that's the note I wrote when you started talking about all of that, and you know, you're like, you know, you could tell it was me learning code as I went. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Again, you finished something. You got it out, right? And that is the single most important thing. And that comes down to the benefit of being a solo indie game dev. This is the part where you were talking about, I scrapped this. Oh, and I started doing this level. Oh, and then I scrapped that. You know, there's a benefit there. You have a lot of flexibility as a solo dev because it's just you. It's just you and your project. The downside is you scrap a lot of content and you maybe kill a lot of time. But again, you made it happen, man, and that's great. And I love the self-awareness of you noticing when you may have too much of something, or you start to bloat, or maybe you hyper-focus or hyper-fixate on something for too long. That's great. And I also like that you talked about the fatigue, because that is a real thing. Your brain is doing some stuff that you've never thought of doing before and never even probably considered, and you never realized how intense that mental gymnastics is that you're doing when you do this stuff. And I wrote that this whole thing, all of game dev, is just a muscle that we're training. And I also wrote here, you did great, Chris. I wrote that. So, Chris, good job. You went on to talk about UI, save data stuff. I know I'm basically giving like a play-by-play commentary here, peeps, but just bear with me. I'm like Chris, but I also wrote down a lot of notes, and I don't want to miss anything. But you started talking about UI and save data. Yeah, UI sucks, 100%. I suck at it, and that's the end of it. My UI for my week-long game was literally play and exit, and then when you paused it, it was resume, restart, and I think exit. And I think that was it. And I used some random font that I found for free on the Unity asset store, and that was it. That was the extent of my UI. It went no further than that. The only other part of my UI was a health bar at the top of the screen, which was outside of the play area. That was the only design choice I made sure to make clear, was that it was outside of the play area, so no enemies would end up hiding behind it, or you wouldn't get hidden behind it. And yeah, that's it, man. UI is awful. I agree. And save data stuff, it can be a pain in the butt. Very much, depending on the method you use, and usually if you're doing game engine stuff, I don't know how well those connect to databases, to be totally honest with you. I'm not sure how well that works. But what I will say is this, it is doable. It's always doable. You just gotta, I would recommend Googling a lot, and I'm sure that's what Chris did. Probably did a whole lot of Googling to figure it out. But yeah, definitely something that's cool. Something on bug fixes, they can always be super easy or awful. Just like that art bug that you talked about. It caused an animation issue. Yeah, 100%. I get that. And then you talked about a real big problem or pain point for this whole project for you was holding off things that intimidated you or made you feel uncomfortable doing for too long, only to find out that maybe it was easy or maybe it's not, and you should have spent more time earlier on it because it wasn't easy, or oh man, I should have done this earlier because it would have been done and I wouldn't have had to worry about it. I wouldn't be stressing over it. something that I think all of us struggle with is tackling your challenges and friction points head on. You know, that's something we all struggle with, man. I struggle with that every day. You know, I think everybody does. Something else you mentioned, just a quick note here, is doing art kind of later down the pipeline. That's probably a good idea. But again, this is something where I'm coming from the perspective of someone who's comfortable programming, and Chris came from a different area where he was comfortable. So maybe you are an art type person, and what, you know, in all reality, Chris, your game kind of was inspired by art in a sense. You know, and for those of you out there who you know, we want to start with art. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, just kind of find your flow. But for me personally, yeah, I would move art to maybe the latter half of the whole pipeline. And the reason for that for me is I'd rather have the function of my game working first, like the functionality, and then you can plop sprites and art down and all that stuff later. My prototypes for my game that I'm kind of diving back into now, it was literally nothing more than shapes with colors and like some text on the screen that was just literally placeholder stuff like poisoned, bleeding. Like it literally just said that on the screen over whatever shape was poisoned or bleeding. So yeah, that's, you know, I get it. Something huge that you talked about that I'm really glad you did. So you said you considered naps as part of work. Good. I am so happy you said that. Now, I am not someone who naps, and that is mostly because I just don't have the time to nap. But boy, do I wish I did. But I find other ways and methods to get that break in. And I wrote, naps and breaks are very important. I put very in all caps in my notes, and I said, find your flow. I also like the term you used. Instead of time management, you used energy management. And you talked about physical activity. And for me, gym, workouts, physical activity, it helps my brain focus on top of the energy benefits. Sometimes when you're just stuck on something, it might help to go for a walk. You know, your brain will wander. You won't think about the problem eventually, depending on how far you walk. And then as you start to get back to your home or workplace, you'll start to remember that problem. And maybe you have a fresh take on it now because you just needed that moment to step away. And if that step away is a nap, nothing wrong with that either. I don't judge you. You know, at my job, I'm allowed to take a 30-minute walk every day if I want. And I take advantage of those when I can. With the weather getting cold, that's sort of changed, but that's okay. Now, something you called quit conditions, most people would call boundaries, but I like quit conditions better because it puts a lot more at stake. You know, you set boundaries for yourself. You said, hey, if XYZ doesn't work, I'm done. This is it. Like, this project is scrapped. And that's awesome. I think that's one of the hardest things about getting into game dev is setting a boundary for yourself. And that's with anything. You know, you could be going feature deep, right? And then you go into feature bloat. And all of a sudden, you just have every feature on in this list of stuff. You're like, yeah, I'm going to do all of it. But then you start to, you know, rubber meets the road. You start to get into the weeds. You start to dig and try to build that foundation. You realize that you put too much on your plate. Most people would call it quits right then and there. But it's more important to take the time and look at your list and go, what can I trim out of here? What is really required? What is that MVP, the minimum viable product, right? Great job, Chris. I mean, seriously, this is all good stuff. I think it's stuff that it's stuff we've all talked about on the show, but it's putting it into practice, right? I like that you said this was the learning was more important than the end state or the end goal. That's awesome. As a professional, whether you're going to be a indie game dev solo guy or go work for a AAA company or do some other job, whatever job you are in, you should always maintain a level of professional or continuous education, right? You should always be approaching it from that perspective, and that'll just make you better over time. The fantasy of it destroys me too, Chris. That's why I try not to do it. I try not to let my brain go into the clouds. I will catch myself letting myself do it occasionally, but I try to avoid it because it's really important for me to just stay grounded in like the dirt and muck of how difficult some things are, you know, and you just have to persevere and push through. Something I found interesting, and this is something I know is going to hit me the same way it hit you, is finishing a project versus releasing a project to the world are two different feelings for two very different reasons. You know, yeah, man, that one hit home for me. And granted, the only game I've quote-unquote published is my week-long Game Jam game. But I remember I finished that project, and I was super proud of it. But the very first thing that happened when I started showing it to people, and even everyone in the podcast, you know, you guys were great. You were really helpful about it. You gave me some good criticisms, and it was awesome. I loved it. Yeah, everybody was super supportive. And even the people who I'm about to mention some of their critiques. These people meant well, and they were super supportive of what I did. But they kept saying to me, like, why don't you add sound? You should add sound to it. And I said, well, this was, you know, that wasn't the point. and like, that self-confidence gets deflated so quickly. You know, and I realized after I'd released my game, like, I don't want to change it. Mine was a little different because, again, I had a very short time frame of which to make a game and learn a game engine all in 1 week. So that was while managing everything else in my life. You know, so mine was a little different. I didn't put a whole year into it yet, which now I'm going to, so that'll be weird. But I have a feeling, well, I'm bouncing around. So let's stay focused on my week-long game jam game. So, like, for me, it was more of a, no, like, the whole point of this was to see how far I could go in 1 week, and I don't ever want to change that game. For me, that one-week game is going to stay there forever in its state that it's in. I was very proud of that, but I also recognized, yeah, I could have added sound, and I should have added sound, but I didn't. I didn't get that far, and that's just how it is. But I know when I finish this project for the year-long jam, or not jam, I'm not going to call it a game jam because it's not, but my year-long project, which is my goal, is to have it finished within a year. I know that when I do finish that and then release it, the finishing is going to feel great. It's going to feel like, wow, I did the thing. I made it happen. And then releasing it is also, it's going to be this weird double-edged sword of like, I'm proud that I finished it and I'm proud that people are enjoying it. But for the same reasons Chris mentioned, it's like, but that's my game. That's it. That is what I have. And Chris, my advice, since I know you want to make this kind of your gig, carry that with you into each iteration of games after this. You know, carry that exact level of care into that. You know, you look at that stuff and go, all right, well, I liked this game, and man, oh, there's this. I would have changed this. I would have done this differently. And you can carry that into every successive project after that. That's very general advice, though, so take it or leave it. Everyone, I have Chris's podcast also is going to be listed in the show notes. The specific episode that he mentioned for how it feels to release a game, I actually am looking forward to listening to that myself. I will hopefully get to it this week. And, yeah, one last thing for you, Chris. Your self-awareness, I'm telling you, it's a great tool in every aspect, whether it's in game dev, game design, or some other professional experience or personal relationships, whatever, internal stuff. Having self-awareness of every little step of this, that's huge, man. You did a great job. I really like your game. Okay, so let's get on to the next thing here that I wanted to do today. This is the only other thing on my task list before I go over some of the fun things I've been doing. So yes, Chris provided Brad and I a free copy of his game Sut, but I am actually going to buy his game, right now, on the show. I have everything ready. It's in my cart. I've put in my info. I'm going to go ahead and hit purchase, and there it goes. There it is. All right, Chris, I have officially, paid for your game. I have it. And I am installing it as we speak. There it is. I'm going to be playing that sometime this week. And I'm hoping I can beat all 50 levels in a night. And I'm sure I'm going to eat those words later. So, great. That's just based on comments I've seen on Discord for everyone who's played it. And, yeah, man. Seriously, congratulations. Great job. I know it's weird to get all of this recognition and all that stuff. But you did an awesome job. We're all very happy for you. Very proud of you. We look forward to what's coming next. And, yeah, so let's talk about what I've been doing. Not really a whole lot. Again, school, work, family life, just keeping busy. But something has happened. World of Warcraft has gotten a lot of updates across pretty much everything. Classic, and retail. And so I'm full in back on that. I'm really pumped. I like the changes that are coming to Classic with the Season of Discovery, which, for those of you who don't know what that is, it's effectively Classic Plus. It's a way of them iterating on Classic content in a new, refreshing way to keep the game still like adhering to that core of the Classic design, but still providing us fun content that possibly we've never seen before. Excuse me real quick. I got to take a drink of water. All right. So I've been diving back into World of Warcraft. I'm on my warrior. It looks like the design team has gone real big on Warrior's Bleed build for arms, and that has me just so pumped because that's like my favorite build as a warrior. I've been tinkering around in the Battleground Blitz thing that they're using as a testing ground for ranked solo battlegrounds. Yeah, you heard that one right if you're familiar with WoW. And that has me more pumped than ranked solo arena does. Solo shuffle is great. I really do like it. But it arena can be intimidating for a lot of people because it is very, very hard. And that's okay. I get it. I'm not good at the game, but I love it and I have fun with it. But solo RBGs, ranked battlegrounds, is going to be something huge for me because trying to find a ranked battleground group, even if you're just joining what they call the YOLO groups, which are just people trying to get into a game and get some rating, it's a pain in the butt, man. It can take 20, 30 minutes sometimes, and it sometimes longer, and it's just not fun. So Blizzard, they're tackling that. Something else I'm looking forward to, which really isn't going to come until the next expansion, so this one's not anytime soon, but the next expansion, they're going to allow those of you who prefer to do world content, meaning you just like being in the open world doing stuff, you guys are actually going to get gear. You'll actually have a chance to do that. They're learning to cater now, I think, to the entire player base. Being a WoW player soon is not going to be about are you a raider or are you a PvPer. You know, and that evolved to are you a raider, are you a mythic plus, or are you a PvPer. It's now become, oh, you play WoW? Cool. What's your favorite aspect of WoW? That's how the question is now going to be framed. And those of you who like to be out in the world and just do world content, whether by yourself or with a group, cool. You're going to have a great time. You want to do PvP? Cool. You're going to have a great time. Mythic Plus, raids, whatever. Whatever your preferred method of playing is, they're really working hard to make all of those possible. Like crafters, you guys... Now, one thing I will say, it's not like Final Fantasy XIV where crafting's like a dedicated class or anything like that, you know. But what I will say is this. Crafting has become more in-depth over time. And I think for WoW and where it is now, it feels good. I'm sure there's some changes coming. The new talent trees that they've got, the hero talents, those sound great. But another thing that has happened is Warcraft Rumble released, which is the mobile game. It's like their version of Clash Royale. But let me tell you something. Blizzard did what they used to do back in the day. And they came in with a genre of game on a platform that's very popular. And they did their own design of it. And it works. It's really cool. I already see some flaws and some changes that I would love to see happen in the game. But for a very first release, this is awesome. Warcraft Rumble is a lot of fun. We have our own guild on there. It's the Distinguished Humans Indie Game Dev Club's official official guild on Warcraft Rumble. So by all means, if you play the game, you're more than welcome. I would highly recommend going to the Discord and just, you know, tagging Brad or I and let us know that you want to join the guild. It is technically full right now, but in terms of listeners, I think it's just me, Brad, and Free World. I think that's the only other person on there. Excuse me while I drink some water. Throat's getting a little parched. But anyway, yeah, been having a lot of fun with that. One huge criticism I have right now is just in PvP, the meta, quote unquote, is all about using smaller characters because the Banshee and Sylvanas both, when Sylvanas dies, she turns into a Banshee, and the Banshee unit tries to take control of another unit and turn it to your side. So the meta has not really allowed huge big decks to kind of thrive right now, because if you play a big dude, unless they're a character that can actually hit the Banshee before it touches them, you're probably not going to have a good time, because the big guys just, they get eaten alive by the Banshee in Sylvanas. I actually cheesed my way to 1k rating with Sylvanas in one day, in 24 hours, because I built a Sylvanas deck where it's Sylvanas and a Banshee and then a few other units, and like my whole gimmick, oh, and I have the talent with Sylvanas. Excuse me. I got to pause this recording for just a moment. Okay, sorry about that. I had a itch in my throat, and it's still kind of there, but that's okay. Anyway, I cheesed my way to the 1K rating with Sylvanas alone by basically putting her in a Banshee in a deck. And I have the talent with Sylvanas that when she dies, nearby enemies get stunned. So my goal with Sylvanas is to throw her into your big, heavy-hitting melee dude and just let him beat her up. And then she'll die, she'll stun that, and then she'll take over. You know, and the Banshee, I just use that on units I know it can take. I'm still learning that, by the way. And even though I've cheesed my way to 1K in 24 hours, I'm still learning that there's units that the Banshee gets killed by before she makes contact. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, so WoW, Warcraft Rumble, it's like all Warcraft right now. It's all I've been doing. I still play Baldur's Gate 3. I'm actually still in on that. There's other stuff here. Let me check my wish lists and whatnot because, oh, I've been playing Dragon Quest 11, again, trying to get back and trying to finish that story. And I actually have gotten to a point where I'm further along in the story than I was when I stopped playing. So that's great. Having a lot of fun with that. And, yeah, that's all I really got going on here. Got a bunch of stuff on my wish list, but nothing too crazy. Yeah, nothing new that I don't think I've mentioned before. So looking forward to that. Oh my goodness gracious. All right, I'm going to have to bring this one in for a close. I feel like I've talked long enough. I hope so anyway. But yeah, Chris, great job. Really proud of you, man. You really did a good job. And I will start sharing these links here on Discord as soon as I'm done recording. So some of you will get a preview of some of the things that are going to come your way. And, yeah, not a whole lot of, well, tons of game dev talk today with thanks to Chris, but not a whole lot going on yet with me, but I am starting to dabble and I will keep you all posted and up to date on that as I progress through it, but just got to get through these next few weeks of school and then it is probably like a week or two off for me and then, it's full on, man. Game dev is happening in my free time whenever I have it. So thank you all again for listening. I know I talk fast when it's just me, so I hope you keep up. And I know my ADHD just wanted to take over today. I was having a lot of trouble staying on topic and wanted to go down every little rabbit or every little side quest that came into my brain. But thank you all again for listening. Go check out Chris's game, Sut, on Steam. 10 out of 10 would recommend. Everybody who's played it so far seems to enjoy it. I am also going to be playing it this week, so by next episode I will definitely have a review ready to rock and roll for you guys, and it will be spoiler free no matter what. And yeah,